ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 24. Tatah kalo sampravritte sammohaya suradvisham buddho nam nanjana sutta kika teshu bhavishyati. Translation: then in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as Lord Buddha, the son of Anjana, in the province of Gaya, just for the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the faithful theist. Purport: Lord Buddha, a powerful incarnation of the personality of Godhead, appeared in the province of Gaya, Bihar, as the son of Anjana, and he preached his own conception of non-violence and deprecated even the animal sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. At the time when Lord Buddha appeared, the people in general were atheistic and preferred animal flesh to anything else. On the plea of Vedic sacrifice, every place was practically turned into a slaughterhouse and animal killing was indulged in unrestrictedly. Lord Buddha preached non-violence, taking pity on the poor animals. He preached that he did not believe in the tenets of the Vedas and stressed the adverse psychological effect incurred by animal killing. Less intelligent men of the age of Kali, who had no faith in God, followed his principle, and for the time being they were trained in moral discipline and non-violence, the preliminary steps for proceeding further on the path of God-realization. He deluded the atheists because such atheists who followed his principles did not believe in God, but they kept their absolute faith in Lord Buddha, who himself was the incarnation of God. Thus, the faithless people were made to believe in God in the form of Lord Buddha. That was the mercy of Lord Buddha. He made the faithless faithful to him. Killing of animals before the advent of Lord Buddha was the most prominent feature of this society. People claimed that these were Vedic sacrifices. When the Vedas are not accepted through the authoritative disciplic succession, the casual readers of the Vedas are misled by the flowery language of that system of knowledge. In the Bhagavad Gita, a comment has been made on such foolish scholars, avipaschitaha. The foolish scholars of Vedic literature who do not care to receive the transcendental message through the transcendental realized sources of disciplic succession are sure to be bewildered. To them, the ritualistic ceremonies are considered to be all in all. They have no depth of knowledge. According to the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa Sarvair Ahameva Vedyaha, the whole system of the Vedas is to lead one gradually to the path of the Supreme Lord. The whole theme of Vedic literature is to know the Supreme Lord, the individual soul, the cosmic situation, and the relation between all these items. When the relation is known, the relative function begins, and as a result of such a function, the ultimate goal of life, or going back to Godhead, takes place in the easiest manner. Unfortunately, unauthorized scholars of the Vedas become captivated by the purificatory ceremonies only, and natural progress is thereby checked. 2. Such bewildered persons of atheistic propensity, Lord Buddha is the emblem of theism. He therefore first of all wanted to check the habit of animal killing. The animal killers are dangerous elements on the path going back to Godhead. There are two types of animal killers. The soul is also sometimes called the animal or the living being. Therefore, both the slaughterers of animals and those who have lost their identity of soul are animal killers. Maharaj Parikshit said that only the animal killer cannot relish the transcendental message of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if people are to be educated to the path of Godhead, they must be taught first and foremost to stop the process of animal killing, as above mentioned. It is understood to say that it is nonsensical to say that animal killing has nothing to do with spiritual realization. By this dangerous theory, many so-called sannyasis have sprung up by the grace of Kali Yuga, who preach animal killing under the garb of the Vedas. This subject matter has already been discussed in the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Maulana Chandkazi Shaheb. The animal sacrifice, as stated in the Vedas, is different from the unrestricted animal killing in the slaughterhouse, because the asuras, or the so-called scholars of Vedic literatures, put forward the evidence of animal killing in the Vedas. Lord Buddha superficially denied the authority of the Vedas. This rejection of the Vedas by Lord Buddha was adopted in order to save people from the vice of animal killing, as well as to save the poor animals from the slaughtering process of their big brothers, who clamor for universal brotherhood, peace, justice, and equity. There is no justice when there is animal killing. Lord Buddha wanted to stop it completely, and therefore his cult of Ahimsa was propagated not only in India but also outside the country. Technically, Lord Buddha's philosophy is called atheistic because there is no acceptance of the Supreme Lord, and because that system of philosophy denied the authority of the Vedas, but that is an act of camouflage by the Lord. Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Godhead. As such, he is the original propounder of Vedic knowledge. He therefore cannot reject Vedic philosophy, but he rejected it outwardly because the Suradvisha, or the demons who are always envious of the devotees of Godhead, try to support cow killing or animal killing from the pages of the Vedas. And this is now being done by the modernized sannyasis. Lord Buddha had to reject the authority of the Vedas altogether. This is simply technical, and had it not been so, he would not have been so accepted as the incarnation of Godhead, nor would he have been worshipped in the transcendental songs of the poet Jayadev, who is a Vaishnava Acharya. Lord Buddha preached the preliminary principles of the Vedas in a manner suitable for the time being, and so also did Shankaracharya, to establish the authority of the Vedas. Therefore, both Lord Buddha and Acharya Shankara paved the path of theism, and Vaishnava Acharya, specifically Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, led the people on the path towards a realization of going back to Godhead. We are glad that people are taking interest in the non-violent movement of Lord Buddha, but will they take the matter very seriously and close the animal slaughterhouses altogether? If not, there is no meaning to the Ahimsa cult. Srimad Bhagavatam was composed just prior to the beginning of the age of Kali, about 5,000 years ago, and Lord Buddha appeared about 2,600 years ago. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Buddha is foretold. Such is the authority of this clear scripture. There are many such prophecies, and they are being fulfilled one after another. They will indicate the positive standing of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is without trace of mistake, illusion, cheating, and imperfection, which are the four flaws of all conditioned souls. The liberated souls are above these flaws, therefore they can see and foretell things which are to take place on distant future dates. Tathakalo sampravritte sammohaya suradvisham buddho namnanjanasutta kikatesho bhavishyati. Then in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as Lord Buddha, the son of Anjana, in the province of Gaya, just for the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the faithful theist. As I'm in Sri Lanka, which I'm not usually, I thought to speak following Srila Prabhupada's purport on Lord Buddha, as Sri Lanka is one of the few places in the world which is dominated by Buddhists, and the majority population is Buddhist. Only Thailand is probably, there are other countries also, but they're changing now the culture. They're Laos, Cambodia. Changing means Christianity, communism, all this kind of thing, have having their effect. Anyway, Lord Buddha, from the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam, is mentioned here as a prophecy. Bhavishyati means will be, because Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled in its present form 5,000 years ago, whereas Lord Buddha appeared according to Vedic chronology about 3,000 years ago. Now, the main point that Srila Prabhupada makes here about Lord Buddha is the message of non-violence, and the Vaishnava Acharyas, they understand that Lord Buddha appeared surprisingly, not exactly the main reason, not exactly the main reason to preach Buddhism, but to stop animal killing, or at least to stop wanton animal killing. Animal killing is always there in human society, mostly throughout the history of the world, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, even in the time when Vedic culture dominated the world, animal killing was there, but with a different purpose. It wasn't exactly killing in the sense that the animal was killed in sacrifice and then revived to a better status of life. Jaidev Goswami, who we could say is the inspiration for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's inner ecstasy of he at the opening of his Gita Govinda, which is not only a Gaudiya text. There was no Gaudiya Sampradaya at the time of Jaidev Goswami. But he glorifies Keshava, Krishna, who has taken the form of Buddha, by saying, Nindasi yagya vidher ahaha shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darshita pashukhatam Keshava dhritta buddha sharira jaya jagadisha hare. So this one verse, ten verses, Jayadev Goswami, in his Dashavata Stotram, he brings out the main point in just two lines of each of these ten avatars. And for Lord Buddha, he brings out the point that Lord Buddha criticized the process of animal sacrifice, nindasi yagya vidhe, that is stated or is established in the Vedas, and out of the compassion of his heart, he wanted to stop the killing of animals. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his discussion, he doesn't speak, we don't find in Chaitanya Charitamrita much about Buddhists or Buddhism. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, discussing Mayavadis, with Mayavadis, with Savabhom, there was a big Mayavadi, that Vedna Mani Abod Haitonastic, because the Buddhists do not accept the Vedas, therefore they are considered atheists, and actually they are na astika. It is not. The Buddha, or Buddhist philosophy upholds the principle of anatta, which is Pali for anatma. There is no self, either individual or in the Mayavadi's conception of a universal self. There is no such thing. It's just a big imagination, according to Buddhists. But they are, according to Lord Chaitanya, they're considered atheists because they don't recognize the Vedas. But as Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport, although they don't recognize any god, they're atheists, they worship Lord Buddha. As the other day in Kandy, we visited the temple of Buddha's tooth, which is the main Buddhist holy place in all of Sri Lanka, which is quite ironic because Lord Buddha, his teachings, if we were to take them at face value, he is not to be worshipped. No one is to be worshipped. But they worship his tooth. So as Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport, Lord Buddha tricked the atheists into worshipping him. And he also established the cult of Ahimsa. This word is Ahimsa. Is known even in the English-speaking world among trendy people who think they're spiritual. People who are influenced by Buddhism. It's one of those words which has gone from Sanskrit into English, along with many others like karma, yoga, guru, pandit, often in a misunderstood form. Of course, they're often misunderstood even in India itself. Ahimsa, originally Sanskrit, the Buddhist cult was originally, it seems, preached and recorded in Pali and other Prakrita languages, and later there was Buddhist texts were composed in Sanskrit also. Another mention of Lord Buddha in Srimad Bhagavatam, Buddha Avatar, this we just read from Canto 1, Chapter 3, where there is a list of incarnations or avatars, and also there's a list in Canto 2, Chapter 7, text 37 describes another avatar of Lord Buddha, David Visham Nigama Vartmani Nishtana Nam Pur Bhir Mayena Vihita Bhir Adrisha Tarbhihi Turbihi Lokangnatang Man Vimoham Ati Pralobham Vesham Vidhaya Bahubhashata Opadharmyam. So, translation. When the atheists, after being well versed in the Vedic scientific knowledge, annihilate inhabitants of different planets, flying unseen in the sky on well built rockets prepared by the great scientist Maya, the Lord will bewilder their minds by dressing himself attractively as Buddha and will preach on sub-religious principles. So it seems that Lord Buddha, various forms of Buddha appeared in various ages and speak on various sub-religious principles. Upadharma, that's mentioned in this verse here, Upadharmyam, bring people from the path of absolute adharma, at least to the path of upadharma, which means it's not really dharma, but it's somewhat. It's not absolute adharma. It's like ahimsa. It's not, ahimsa does not in and of itself constitute dharma, but it is a principle of dharma. It's part of dharma. So Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse, the incarnation of Lord Buddha is not the same Buddha incarnation we have in the present history of mankind. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Buddha incarnation mentioned in this verse appeared in a different Kali age. In the duration of one life of Manu, there are more than 72 Kali Yugas, and in one of them, the particular type of Buddha mentioned here would appear. Lord Buddha incarnates at a time when people are most materialistic and preaches common sense religious principles. Such ahimsa is not a religious principle in itself, but it is an important quality for persons who are actually religious. It is a common sense religion because one is advised to do no harm to any other animal or living being, because such harmful actions are equally harmful to he who does the harm. But before learning these principles of non-violence, one has to learn two other principles, namely to be humble and to be prideless. So this is paraphrasing the in Bhagavad Gita, Amanitvam Adhambitvam Ahimsa Kshantir Arjavam. So before ahimsa comes, Amanitvam Adhambitvam, humble and prideless, which are almost synonymous. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. And after being non-violent, one has to learn tolerance and simplicity of living. One must offer respects to the great religious preachers and spiritual leaders, and also train the senses for controlled action, learning to be unattached to family and home. So this whole section is a paraphrase of that section. Asakta anabhishvanga putra dara grihadishu. This is what we're just reading here. And enacting devotional service to the Lord, etc. At the ultimate stage, one has to accept the Lord and become his devotee. Otherwise, there is no religion. In religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to religious principles. I'll just read a little more from what Srila Prabhupada has written in another purport to Canto 6, Chapter 10, Text 9. Everyone should be unhappy to see others in distress and happy to see others happy. Atmavat sarva bhuteshu. One should feel the happiness and distress of others as his own. It is on this basis that the Buddhist religious principle of non-violence, ahimsa parama dharma, is established. We feel pain when someone disturbs us, and therefore we should not inflict pain upon other living beings. Lord Buddha's mission was to stop unnecessary animal killing, and therefore he preached that the greatest religious principle is non-violence. One cannot continue killing animals and at the same time be a religious man. This is the greatest hypocrisy. So, there's non-violence. Ahimsa parama dharma. This is said to be the highest dharma, the highest religious principle. Non-violence. This is comes in Buddhist teachings. Although most Buddhists, people who presume themselves, who identify themselves to be followers of Buddha, most of them are also meat eaters. Even the monks. As I heard when I was living in Thailand, attempting to do some preaching there in the 1980s, when I asked, well, how can you eat meat? Well, they won't kill, the Buddhists will never kill, but they have someone else do the killing for them. So the Muslim a very small Muslim population in Thailand, except in the south of Thailand, there's a large Muslim population. But the vast majority of the country, the Muslim population, they kill animals. And fish, well, you pull them out of the river or the sea and they just die. You don't kill them, so to speak. Although on the streets of Bangkok it was a common sight and very more noticeable by the very strong smell of having a karai of hot oil on the trolley, what do you call it? Hot lorry, what do you call that? Portable trolley for selling food. I'm trying to use some words that non-Indians will understand. Hot lorry is Gujarati, so they say. Anyway, they have the hot oil and then a container full of live grasshoppers and empty it out into the hot oil. So people didn't seem to mind. And then they would sell it for people to eat. A very strong, horrible smell. So people have a way of changing the instructions. Even though Lord Buddha preached non-violence, it's said that the last food he ate was truffles, which means, what is that, pig's brains or something, I can't remember exactly, although some people say it's a kind of mushroom, so they say, well, he also ate it. And it's also said that the Buddhist monks, when they're out collecting, they should be detached. They go begging. The Buddhist monk, they're called bhikkhu, which is the same as Bengali for bhikshuk, which is Sanskrit for, literally means, well, there's no real literal word for bhiksha. Bhiksha means begging, but religious begging of monks. So they have their bowl, and when people put meat in, they should be detached. They can't say, no, I want this. You just take whatever people give you. So if they give you meat and fish, then you should take it. I wonder if they would eat if you put stool in there. But no one does that. I mean, we never heard of such a thing. If they were tantrics, they might, or this, what they're called, aghori, one kind of sadhu in India. There are not many of them, but they used to do things like that, eating stool and so on, just to become detached. Anyway, meat eating is actually allowed in the Vedas, although it's not encouraged. Under certain circumstances, in certain, but generally for a pure Vaishnava, the general standard is patrang pushpang palang tauyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadahang bhaktyu paharitam ashnami prayata manaha. Krishna says, if one offers me with bhakti, with pure devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, prayata manaha, following all the proper procedures, then I will accept it. So Krishna spoke this to Arjuna. It's well known in Bhagavad Gita. Who else did he speak it to? Anyone know? Sudama Vipra. When he came to Krishna just with some four morsels, this mushti, this as much as you can carry in one hand, of chipped rice, and he didn't want to give it to Krishna, but Krishna took by force. Then at this time Krishna spoke the same verse. You'll find in the Bhagavata, 10th canto, chapter 80 something. So this was a practical example. He spoke it theoretically to Arjuna, and Sudama actually brought it with pure love for Krishna some chipped rice. I'm not sure exactly whether that falls in the category of patram, pushpam, whatever, but this is the kind of food that Krishna likes to eat and his devotees eat, his remnants. So this animal killing is allowed in Vedic culture under restriction, but it's not encouraged. And in pure Vaishnavism, it's not there. If one is to be a pure Vaishnava, one cannot support this slaughterhouse civilization, making slaughterhouses for killing animals. It's very sinful. Pollutes, apart from all this suffering it inflicts on animals, it's very sinful. As Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport to the verse we read, it's hypocrisy. People are talking about peace, justice, equity, but they're killing animals. And they become disturbed at cruelty to humans. But what about cruelty to animals? They also suffer. They also feel. Some people in the modern world are waking up to this now, and there are animals' rights movements. Recently in New Zealand, it was recognized by law that animals are sentient beings. There is now, in New Zealand, animals now are sentient beings. Previously they weren't, but now the law recognizes. But I doubt if they're going to stop their New Zealand lamb business. That's one of the big exports of New Zealand. New Zealand lamb. You know what lamb is? Lamb means young sheep. So exporting lamb's meat is a major part of the economy of New Zealand. At least it used to be, because it used to be exported to Britain mostly before Britain joined the European Union. So it's sinful and it pollutes the consciousness. One has to be in polluted consciousness to kill animals anyway. That's why they're a religion. We're talking about that in Islam. They consider, especially now this Ramadan began, and when they ended, it's bad news for the goats and the sheep, because there's thousands and thousands. Their throats will be cut only by special butchers who know the art of doing it, so that the animals are bled fully, so they can have halal or sacred or sanctified meat. But this is not a high grade of religion. This is not good. Krishna is not pleased. The Supreme Lord is not pleased by animal slaughter. Now, the Vedic culture is also very practical and recognizes, as I'll also quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, one verse that Srila Prabhupada often quoted, especially the last pada, the last leg of it, the last three words in this case. Ahastan. Ahastani sahastanam. Apadani chatushpadam, ahastani sahastanam, apadani chatushpadam, palguni tatra mahatang jivo jivasya jivanam. Those living beings who don't have hands are prey for those who do have hands. So creatures like fish and snakes, they may be caught by birds and eaten by them. Some humans also eat snakes. That's also in those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong, and the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. Yet the natural law in the kingdom of nature is that might makes right. Those who are strong, they eat those who are weak. The big animal eats the smaller animal. Or the animals eat the plants. Sometimes the smaller eat the bigger. That's also there. When a big animal dies, the little animals become... And even sometimes a big fish is eaten by a small fish. How is that possible? Because the big fish can't get... How can it be swallowed? It doesn't get swallowed wholly, just like... The mosquito is smaller than us, but still eats us, so the small fish can take a little bite out of the big fish. So everyone's trying to get something from someone else. Sometimes people say, well, you're also killing plants. That's true. Vegetarians may also kill plants, but the level of consciousness of a plant is such that it does not suffer to the level of an animal. So, for instance, there's so many jackfruit trees going just all over the place. If you like jackfruit sabji, come here and have as much as you like. The trees are just going wild, and now's the season. You can have avocado trees growing wild, and what else? Lemon trees? No.
Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah,
it should be the right climate for lemon trees also. All kinds of trees are growing wild around here. So when we cut a jackfruit from the tree, the tree doesn't feel the pain that an animal feels when you cut the animal's throat. And also another point is that you don't actually kill the tree by taking a fruit from it. Similarly, grains such as rice and wheat are harvested after the plant dies. When the rice in the field or the wheat becomes yellow, that means already the plant has died, and then you harvest it after that. So when we take milk from the cow, of course the vegans, they complain, but it doesn't kill the cow. So there are gradations there. Some violence is unavoidable in this world. Full ahimsa is not possible. Therefore, the Bhagavatam, very practically, or wisely we can say, advises proper behavior entails, the exact term used is nati hringsena, na ati hingsa, not excessive violence. We cannot avoid some harm to others, but we should not unnecessarily cause harm to others. At the present time, the great cruelty is a very prominent symptom of human society. In the last year or so, avid followers of the news have been shocked by exhibitions of cruelty by members of this Islamic State organization who they after defeating soldiers, their opponents, they capture them and they behead them all. There was one famous, infamous incident of a young man, Jordanian pilot, they're all Muslims, they're fighting amongst each other, who was put in a cage and then doused with petrol and set alight. And they put it on video so that all the world can see how cruel they are. They seem to take pleasure in that. That is a symptom of Kali Yuga. In Bhagavatam is also mentioned, one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is vritta hingsa. Vritta means meaningless. There's no meaning. Sometimes some cruelty is required. Just like, for instance, some tooth may be pulled out. It's very painful. It seems like cruelty, but it may be required. Dental surgery, or it may be required. A rabid dog may need to be killed. Otherwise, they'll go around biting people and giving them rabies also. So sometimes some cruelty is required, but cruelty just for the sake of it, taking pleasure in it, this is surely a symptom of Kali Yuga, and people's consciousness is extremely polluted. And to ascribe this to the will of God is certainly perverse. Anyway, it's cruelty To be cruel is perverse, and to do so in the name of the all, in the name of the all good, is more perverse. Now, you might think I'm on a religion bashing talk here today, bashing Buddhism and now Islam, but no, not exactly. We have to understand the science of God. Srimad Bhagavatam means Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, understanding the science of knowledge of God, distinguishing what is proper from what is improper, going beyond mere sentiment or attachment to some religious process without understanding the principles. Otherwise, if we blindly follow, it's very dangerous to blindly follow anything. But well, of course, if you get the right path, then blind following can be good. But then that blind following, where even the right thing to blindly follow it, then we are likely to be misled at some point to some misunderstanding. So in the Kali Yuga, almost everything everyone does is all based on misconceptions which arise from highly polluted consciousness. So this Bhagavatam is meant for paramo nirmat saranam satam, saintly people who are free of envy. Envy means to, in the way Srila Prabhupada uses the word, means it's very much like hingsa, of which ahimsa is the opposite. It's to dvesha, to dislike others, to have malice. Malice is a good word. To have bad feeling towards others for no good reason. Yeah. So ahimsa, it's a principle, non-violence. It's a principle which, on principle, every good person should want to adopt. It's straightforward. Why should we be, if we want to be good, then we should not cause harm to others. But we have to properly understand what is hingsa and what is ahimsa. Otherwise, in the name of ahimsa, of non-violence, we can actually do harm to others. Srila Prabhupada told the story of a young man who was raised by his aunt, who indulged him. As a young man, a young boy, she didn't want to be nasty to him. She let him do whatever he likes. So because he didn't train the boy or discipline him in any way, then he had no idea. He didn't know what was right and what is wrong. He fell into bad company. And as a young man, he was he became a criminal, a murderer. He was arrested by the state and sentenced to death. So as his last wish, as he was just waiting to be have his neck put in the noose, he asked, "My aunt is standing there crying. You call her, tell her to come." He told her, "You put your ear right next to my mouth," because he was tied up, and he bit her ear, bit it right off. A very violent thing to do. He said to her, I'm doing this to you because it's your fault I'm here today. Because you didn't punish me, now I'm being punished in this way." So some violence is needed, just like in the schools in Sri Lanka. Still they use this bamboo, is it not, for disciplining the boys. Do you often use that? You use it daily, you have to use it? Yes. Not on the girls. Only boys. How do you discipline the girls?
speaking.
Only by speaking. Only by speaking. The boys get the bamboo cane. I also got when I was a child sometimes. We saw bamboo. The only use we knew of bamboo was for naughty boys in school. So of course Srila Prabhupada didn't approve of that for our children, it seems, although there are some indications that maybe he did. Some discipline is required. Otherwise, if we say total non-violence, I often gave this example, that if we said, if the government of India was to say, okay, now we're going to really follow Mahatma Gandhi and no violence, we won't. So then Pakistan will say, very good. And they'll come in and take over the country. We're seeing the failure of idealistic liberalism in Europe, that we should be nice to everyone, and now they've let so many immigrants come in the country. Now there's a backlash against that because the many immigrants, they don't want to. They have a different outlook on life altogether. Especially we're talking here about Muslim immigrants. So the very liberal countries are now becoming less liberal. Again, for fans of the news, Denmark, one of those Scandinavian ultra-liberal countries, has now voted in a government that will be dominated by non-liberals, who has a backlash against this being nice to people who don't reciprocate in the same way. The idea that we'll all be very nice, but then some people will take advantage of that. So ahimsa is not a practical policy. Although in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions it twice, I believe, as a saintly quality, at the same time he's exhorting Arjuna to fight. Which may seem contradictory, but it is a fact. And I suppose here in Sri Lanka, when the Sinhalese Buddhists were fighting against the Tamils, that they justified that although they're supposed, the Sinhalese mostly are Buddhists. The Buddhists are all Sinhalese, and most of the Sinhalese are Buddhists. They must have justified that on the fact that there's sometimes fighting is necessary. It's just practical in this world. You can't, if you just say no violence, then someone will come and take advantage. So Vedic culture recognizes that ahimsa is the proper platform, but it also recognizes that not everyone's going to be good, so some violence is required. And therefore, there are brahmanas who are supposed to be non-violent, and then kshatriyas who are supposed to be violent. As Srila Prabhupada points out in a purport in the Bhagavad Gita as it is, that for just as for a brahmana to be non-violent is dharmic, for a kshatriya to be non-violent is adharmic. Kshatriya must be violent when required. It is required to protect the peace in the world. So if we are going to be non-violent, which is a very good quality, we don't want to promote, yes, let's have lots and lots of violence. To live with non-violence is very good. We see in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, the core of the pastimes are herding cows and playing with the cowherd boys and dancing with the cowherd girls. It's a very peaceful, non-violent, non-aggressive kind of life. But then when the demons came in Vrindavan, Krishna killed them. Then he went outside of Vrindavan, although he had no inherent wish to, And the reason he stayed outside, as he explained via Uddhava and personally himself when he met the inhabitants of Vrindavan, I have to stay outside because there are all these demons. I have to look after them. I have to look after them means he has to kill them. So that is required, although the ideal is a very peaceful society. But ahimsa, if it's only a societal, social principle, it's only directed toward the body and the mind, then it's mundane, which means that it must degrade into hingsa. If there's no knowledge of the actual principle of non-violence, which means not to envy Krishna, then simply to speak of non-violence, that will degrade, because without coming to a higher platform of Krishnarte Kila Cheshta, doing everything for Krishna's pleasure, then we will think in terms of myself, my family, my friends, my country, my community, and then we'll be in enmity with others, and then mutual distrust, violence, they must follow. So really ahimsa is, it's possible to establish the ahimsa when we come to the fully spiritual platform, putting Krishna in the center. As Srila Prabhupada often gave the example, just like in a, if there is a calm body of water, and we throw one stone, and we throw another stone in exactly the same spot, then, and we can throw any number of stones in the same spot in the water, and the ripples will be concentric. But if we throw in different spots, then the nice circular pattern won't be there, and the different ripples will be, they'll clash with each other and make a chaos. So we have to know what is the center. Krishna is the center. Whereas in the Kali Yuga, in the material world in general, hingsa is the principle, envy. And in Kali Yuga, particularly so. There used to be an idea, I don't know how prominent it is now, but that was definitely prominent in the Western world in the last few hundred years, the idea that society is developing, we're progressing, everything is getting better. So the idea is that now we're more civilized. Previously people were barbaric, and we used to have the Genghis Khan, and then there were the Huns and the Goths and Visigoths and all these people. It was all barbaric. Now we're civilized. And then in the first half of the 20th century in Europe arose Hitler's Nazi movement, which was, which even today in the Western world, there is a strong sense of horror at the, if we want to use one word which best describes the whole Nazi movement, we could say cruel. The people are horrified by the cruelty that they perpetrated. Actually, on their own, not even so much on the people who they attacked, on the might is right principle, and people of other countries, but citizens of their own country, and particularly the Jews, and also homosexuals and gypsies. But the major group were the Jews. How cruel could they be? So this idea that now we're more advanced, Well, they took that as an aberration, but we see that now it's just in the 21st century, it's become just some, just like, for instance, there are these killing drones, which the United States has developed this technology by which they send these drones and they just kill people on the other side of the world, and no one seems to care. Of course, the people who are getting killed, they care, but in the mainstream press, it's just like something, just like killing animals in the slaughterhouse. They don't seem to think there's anything particularly wrong with it. So cruelty, how cruel can you be? In Europe also, in the 1980s, there's a war in Yugoslavia. How cruel. Stories of the cruelty, how nasty people could be to each other. Once I was on a train in Russia, there was a man in the compartment that we were in. He brought out his knife, and he was preparing his cutting bread with it, and he told his companion, there was myself and Gunam Dham, my disciple, traveled with me and translated for me at that time, and there were these other two. And this man's, afterwards, Gunadham told me that this man told the other man, he said, "You see, with this knife," which he was just using for taking fish out of the can and spreading and cutting his bread, he said, "With this knife, I used to cut people's eyes out and cut their ears off with the same knife." He was saying, as if it's just fun. How cruel. How nasty, how normal. So this kind of torture and cruelty, how we can hardly imagine how people could even do that. How can we take this cruelty out of the world? Well, the first thing, we'll have to stop killing animals, as Srila Prabhupada points out. As long as there are slaughterhouses, then if we are cruel to animals, then we'll be cruel to humans also. But then if you say, then okay, let's join, make a movement, PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. Yes, it's good. They should make a campaign. But it's only one. There are so many ways in which humans are mistreating each other and mistreating the environment and mistreating themselves. There's so many problems. What to do? What can be done? If we try to solve one problem, okay, let's stop the cruelty problem. Anyway, you can't stop it. But still, there'll be the ecological disaster is going on, economic disaster is going on. What can we do? Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. Kale dosha nithe rajan asti hieko mahanguna kirtana deva krishnasya. Mukta sangha param brajet. In Kali Yuga, everything is wrong. It's a great ocean of faults. If you try to enumerate all the faults, there's no end to it. So the only solution is chanting of the holy names of Krishna. And that's not only the solution to the problems in this world, but it's the solution to the whole problem of being in this world. So we can get out of this world and go to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Iti sho rashakam nam nam. Kali kalmasha nashanam natav parataropaya sarvavedeshu drishyate. In this Kali Yuga, these 16 names, they destroy all the contamination of Kali Yuga. And if we search all the Vedas, we can't find a better method than this. So Krishna comes in Kali Yuga as his name, Kali Kali Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar Nam Hoite Hoi Sharva Jagate Nishta. In this Kali Yuga, Krishna has descended into the world as his holy names, and the whole universe can be delivered by the chanting of Krishna's names. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes, another perspective that on violence then is not hingsa, cruelty means not to preach Krishna consciousness. There's another perspective on ahimsa. Srila Prabhupada writes, the word jiva hingsa, envy of other living entities, actually means stopping the preaching of Krishna consciousness. Preaching work is described as paropakar, welfare activity for others. Those who are ignorant of the benefits of devotional service must be educated by preaching. If one stops preaching and simply sits down in a solitary place, he is engaging in material activity. So not preaching is violence, and we should also know what to preach, how to preach. If we preach some nonsense in the name of Krishna consciousness, or mundane principles in the name of Krishna consciousness, help the body, help the country, and all this kind of thing, that's another kind of violence to, in the name of Krishna consciousness, to promote mundane welfare activities and so on. So all these points, it's a great science to understand all these points. Science in the sense that it's a great discipline. It's all logically connected. It's not simply some religious mumbo jumbo. Everything makes sense. That is the science of Krishna as given in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we had a little look just now at Buddha avatar and the principles of ahimsa as discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam. And we pray that this land of Sri Lanka may be overwhelmed with the waves of Krishna prema. People can actually be happy. It's like an island paradise, in the sense, very beautiful. Weather is generally quite equable. You can, although here there's been a lot of rain and wind, but so much tea is growing here, but other things could be grown which are better, more use for humankind than tea. Lord Rama came here, of course some people dispute that. The geographical location of the Lanka that's described in Ramayana is not the same as here. Of course he could have moved in that time, it was a long time ago. Anyway, there are many places here on this island today which are connected with the pastimes of Rama. So he's here in people's consciousness. We want to increase that. May the whole world take the great gift of Krishna consciousness and become free from envy and illusion. Just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was chanting and dancing in Jharkhanda, the lions and the deer embraced each other. So let the humans also come together and embrace each other in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. So,